back from Marfa, back from the Southwest, back from the Airbnb where my Wi-Fi went wrong, back releasing the podcast as usual on a Wednesday. Welcome to Tasteland.
Welcome to Tasteland. Yeah, the Wi-Fi thing hopefully won't give me lingering trust issues or either of us.
Yeah.
But I think we showed a lot of calm under stress and flexibility.
Mm-hmm. A lot of agility, as they say in the startup world. Agile scrum.
Nope, that's not what scrum means.
Anyways. We do have a guest today, and they are waiting in the wings. Who are we talking to today, Daisy?
We're talking to Bibi Praval, and I had a call with her. She works for a company called Maine. They develop scents and flavors.
No relation to the state?
No, and it's spelled differently. But they work with things like in the lab on a molecular level, but they also help celebrities and larger brands develop perfumes. And I talked to her a few months ago for a different project Dirt is working on, but I thought she would make an amazing podcast guest. So I asked her to come on.
I am so excited to talk to her. Let's let her in.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
So excited to have you here. As you know, I know a little bit about fragrance. Francis really knows nothing. So he's excited to be a sponge. So I guess let's start off with some questions about your background, if that's okay.
Sure.
Francis, do you want to jump in?
Yeah. So I was looking for information on you, BB. Not a lot out there, but I did find your LinkedIn. So let's start. Like, you went to school to get a degree in cosmetics and fragrance marketing from FIT 20 years ago.
I did.
Yes. So,
which was my second degree.
Yes. After 10 years. Why did you go back? What brought you into the fragrance? Why did you want to go in and do that?
So I actually didn't know that these jobs existed. I sort of didn't realize that you could work in fragrance. I don't know where I thought it came from, but you know, I had always loved it. And after college, the first time, I had come back to New York and I was at my parents' house. And I remember I was just sort of online looking around for stuff. And I saw something called Fragrance Fun Day online. And I was like, I was astounded. And I went to it and it was at Lincoln Center. And it was this huge tent filled with fragrance fanatics. And it was like I had found my Mecca. There were quizzes, there were prizes, there was all this stuff you could do. And I remember I had won a prize of a little Michael Jordan cologne. And I had never been prouder of anything in my entire life for like identifying the smells of something. I was so thrilled. But that was, and that was, run by the Fragrance Foundation. And it was the first time I'd ever heard of them. So fast forward 3 jobs, and on Monster there was an ad for a job at the Fragrance Foundation. It was the division was called the Sense of Smell Institute, and it was a fundraising event planning sort of job, which is what I had been previously doing. And I was like, okay, this is my in. And while I was there, I decided that I really wanted to smell more. So I went back to school because it's a hard industry to get into if you don't know someone or if you don't sort of take the school route.
Yeah. I love that. I love what you said, that you decided you wanted to smell more.
So I was in the part, the scientific branch where we were giving money to scientists who did olfactive research, which was great and fascinating. And I helped organize something called, Sense of Smell Day at public schools where kids could learn about their sense of smell, which was really interesting. But meanwhile, the Fragrance Foundation organizes the FIFI Awards, which are called the Fragrance Foundation Awards now, which are kind of like the Academy Awards of fragrance. So they needed all hands on. So I got to participate a little bit in that, but it was just a teaser.
Yeah.
So that's when I was like, I need to smell more.
Wait, one thing you said about like teaching, what something about like the teaching kids like how to smell and stuff like that. So I grew up like on a small farm, rural area. I think you're from New York, and I imagine this was in New York, right? So that made me think of, like, you know, when you're a kid out in rural California, they tell you that, oh, you know, like kids in big cities like New York, like they don't know where milk comes from. So I immediately thought of that. I guess my question there is like, what are you teaching? I just want to talk about that for a second. What are you teaching kids about how to smell, like, back then in those things, in those days?
Well, it's sort of, people don't really realize that taste and smell are so closely linked.
Yeah.
There's that, I don't know if you've ever done it, the jelly bean test. Have you ever tried this?
I probably like 25 years ago.
Is this similar to the onion and apple test?
Probably, where you, okay. I mean, if you hold your nose and you have two jelly beans that are the same color, one could be cinnamon and one could be cherry. Mm-hmm. You won't be able to tell with your nose pinched mm-hmm. which one's which, because mm-hmm. all the receptors, all you're getting is sweet on your tongue. Okay. So for kids to learn that, it's pretty interesting. And it's like a fun little science experiment. And then they just love smelling things. It's an industry that is sort of secretive. Mm-hmm. It's not advertised widely. So, you know, letting kids know when they're young that this is a job is always great.
Yeah.
And where my company's doing a lot of work sort of now to try and get out into actually universities to do it at a higher level now.
Nice.
Why is it historically so secretive as an industry?
Because the perfumer formulas were considered gold. I mean, in the earliest days of fragrance, if someone stole another perfumer's formula, like it was the worst crime possible. Mm. It was the fragrance that belonged to the person who that perfumer made it for life, pretty much.
So bespoke.
Yes. Yeah. Like so bespoke. And they were just, you know, sort of kept in safes, and there was a lot of secrecy around it.
What historical era are we talking about with this?
So I'm thinking this fragrance, apparently, this is what I've learned, came from glove makers in Europe, and they used to tan the leather with urine, and it smelled terrible, as you can imagine. So they would make these little blends of naturals to cover the smell of the urine on the gloves. And that was sort of the birth of these little formulas. Mm-hmm. And then, so the glove makers and the perfumers were sort of linked. And then each person of money would have their own sort of personal perfumer. I go to this person, you go to that person. And at the time, they were only working with naturals, with aromatic notes and citruses. And that's where eau de colognes came from, which were the first fragrances sort of on the market. And I guess the first eau de cologne, we say maybe it's 4711, which is still sold today. I can tell you when that launched. Hold on 1 second. It's actually having a little bit of a comeback because of TikTok, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, we're going to get into TikTok. So you mentioned getting over a cold, and as you were talking about the connection between taste and smell, I was remembering, you know, the first time I got COVID, I really, really lost my sense of smell and taste. And I had, you know, I was very afraid it wouldn't come back, you know, not necessarily COVID, but really anything that affects your sense of smell. Like, do perfumers have like holistic things that you do to try to prevent getting sick, or is it just sort of like, you know, it's part of the job and like being human, and if you're out of commission, you're out of commission?
Backtracking 1 second, 4711 came out in 1799.
Okay.
Wow. So we did have one perfumer lose his sense of smell during COVID, and it was terrifying. Mm-hmm. He was scared. We were all super scared. And I mean, every morning I got up during COVID and smelled every product in my shower just to make sure that I still had it. It was my number one fear because, I mean, I'd be done.
Your nose is your livelihood.
Yeah. I don't have so many marketable skills.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I doubt that.
But yeah, we get sick, and I don't think people do anything crazy to prevent it. We actually all sit pretty close to each other. So, the illness travels.
Okay, wait. So you got your degree back then, going back to that, in cosmetics and fragrance marketing. And then the jobs you held for 17 years, you were a fragrance evaluator, right? So this seems like two different things to me. I'm curious, like, start with the marketing bit. Like, was that was just your in to it? And then
that's the only fragrance degree really you can get in New York. That's what it's called. Mm-hmm. So you can either take the cosmetic route or the fragrance route in this degree, or sort of like your focus, where you're more interested in. Obviously, I was interested in fragrance. And there's one evaluation course. There's one perfumery course. And then you have like a formulation course for skincare and those sorts of things. But that's sort of the closest you could get. And then your last semester in the program, you get an internship. And I had mine with a fragrance house. And I was lucky that they hired me out of that internship to train
Symrise,
in evaluation,
right?
At Symrise. Yep. Yeah. But still, then I had to be trained on all the ingredients and how to smell properly and all that stuff. So it's still more learning as you go. I mean, and every day. That's kind of why the job's so fantastic, is like you actually keep going every day.
Is it like a wine thing, like becoming a master sommelier?
It's it is like a wine thing, but it's not like a wine thing. Did you see Somme? Did you see that?
I have not, but I have some friends who are Somme, so I just hear about it from them.
They're very intense. Like I watched it, and it's a different I don't know how to say, sort of like dynamic. Huh. We're a lot more laid back.
One of the things that Francis wanted to ask you about is like different industries attract different archetypes of people. And like, what is the archetypal person that ends up as a fragrance evaluator?
I can actually speak more easily to the perfumers.
Yeah.
Because across the board, the majority of them are artists in all sorts of art, be it like, you know, making fancy cocktails or painting or woodworking. Like they all have these hidden talents, and you sort of find out that they're all very skilled in various art forms. Evaluation is different. I wouldn't say that there's anything across the board that links us, except that we love to smell things. We're the people who, you know, whenever you go into a store, instantaneously picking everything up and sniffing it. Mm-hmm. And usually you've been doing that since you were a little kid.
Mm-hmm. Does it make being in the city and just walking through crowds too overstimulating?
There are certain fragrances that at this point in New York, when I smell, I have to like make big loops.
Make a birth.
Can we name some of them?
I can't do it. It's just not nice. But if you live in New York, you probably know which ones I'm talking about.
Yeah, yes.
I have one in my mind at least.
Yeah. When I was pregnant, my sense of smell like doubled, and I could smell a garbage truck three blocks away. Mm-hmm. It was insane. That was rough. But normally the city, I mean, I'm kind of used to it.
Yeah.
It's fine.
My mom has an amazing sense of smell as well. And, you know, not necessarily channeled into perfume, but she could smell milk before it went bad. Mm-hmm. We always said, and, I always wonder like what, you know, fragrances of mine that she would like, because she'll comment. But when I started wearing Bow Makers by Diaz and Durga, which is sort of like my signature, she really liked it. She told me immediately that she liked it. So I ended up getting her the travel size.
But then I found out
she was like rationing it. You know, I got her the smaller one because I thought it'd be more convenient for her to carry around the roller. But then I found out she was rationing it, and that made me really upset. So now I want to just get her like the biggest bottle.
And do you feel good about wearing the same fragrance as your mother?
Definitely, definitely. Because I think she considers it like a special occasion thing. So there was a period of time where I was wearing, or was using like the same shampoo my husband's grandmother used to use. And I think that was a little weird for him.
That's intense.
But I'm okay wearing the same fragrance as my mom, because unfortunately we don't spend a ton of time together. And it smells
nice.
Different on every person.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
But there is a lot of gatekeeping around fragrance. that's mm-hmm. been coming up where people won't tell you what they're wearing because they don't want you to take it. Mm-hmm. They won't post it online.
It's so personal.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, speaking of gatekeeping, like TikTok, obviously somebody who makes TikToks about fragrance, their whole value proposition to the audience and get their attention is that they're not gatekeeping. But then, of course, that person can secretly gatekeep right. what they consider mm-hmm. their best or most personal stuff. But in general, like in this moment, there's, from my perspective, the least amount of secrecy and gatekeeping in the perfume market that there's ever been. And, you know, the success of like Glossier's You, and I know they have a new scent coming out, I think, just proves, yeah, that this is really a mass market. So mm-hmm. how has TikTok changed the game?
Yeah, wow. TikTok really has piqued the interest of so many people who otherwise would not be into fragrance, I think. Mm-hmm. Just because it's hit this much younger market. We've been seeing this influx of young boys, not young boys, but boys, young men, who teens. Have teens. Yes.
Scent bros. There's a New York Times piece about it, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Have this super elevated niche taste and somehow the money to purchase the fragrances. And it's become a status thing with them, which is mind blowing to me and amazing for the industry.
Just that it's these young kids, that these young men, like what about it specifically?
Also just that it's, they're picking these particular fragrances. Oh, mm-hmm. They're not just wearing, you know, Calvin Klein and Armani and like the best-selling Chanel. They're mm-hmm. wearing niche, teeny niche brands with like big, heavy amber wood notes. Mm-hmm. But these bottles are selling for like $300 to $400. So they're saving up their money from the holidays. They're asking it for gifts. It's intense. Like it's a commitment. Mm-hmm. I have not come across any of them walking around New York yet, mm-hmm. but I'm sure I would be able to smell them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, teens are not light-handed when it comes to putting on fragrance.
Francis, when you were growing up, did you know about anything other than like Axe body spray?
Well, I didn't use that. No, I mean, I...
Oh, excuse
look,
me.
Look, a body spray. No, I was using... I was just using, like, deodorant. No, I didn't think about perfume much at all myself until mm-hmm. probably in college. And then my girlfriend had a perfume she always wore. She doesn't really wear it anymore. She has some other ones. But then the first time I thought of fragrance for myself was when I moved to New York. I worked at the Stumptown, the Ace Hotel on 29th and Broadway.
And I know exactly what you're talking about.
In the same building or like two doors down. And yeah. One of the guys there would come in, you know, when you work in the same, like the same row and you're all shop people, like you just trade things, you know, he's not paying for the coffee. He would bring mm-hmm. us the little sample bottles of Le Labo. Mm-hmm. So I started, I forget which two I used. One was like, there was another 29 or something like that was one of them. And then there's a bergamot one. And those are the two I really liked. But so I actually didn't buy my first fragrance, until
you bartered. That's nice.
I did. It was,
I know. I love that culture. Story. That's
but this summer I did buy my first fragrance, in Berlin. So mm-hmm. it is, I don't know if it's Min or MIN New York, mm-hmm. Chef's Table. By them, which was funny. We were in Berlin, and there's this stationery store I really like. And so we were there, bought a little notebook, and we're leaving. And then there's this fragrance store, like one door down, and we go in, and I wasn't really intending to buy anything. I have enough expensive vices that I like to buy clothes, etc. You know, it's like I always say, like with records, I don't own any records because I spend enough money already. So I was like, well, these are cool, but you know, not something I need to buy. But I did end up leaving with the 15 milliliter bottle of the Chef's Table, because you know, the guy's like, well, what do you like? I was like, oh, no, I'm not going to get it.
I don't think I've ever seen.
I'm looking it up on Fragrantica right now. We're gonna
the top is tomato leaf, bergamot, and basil. The heart is Turkish rose, iris, and clary sage, and the base is tonka bean, ambergris, and musk.
Sounds delicious.
So it's very garden. It's very like, I do love a tomato too.
But you don't smell like pizza.
No.
It's a tomato leaf is very different than tomato.
It's less, less the kitchen, more the garden.
Okay. Yeah.
It's very green.
Mm-hmm.
I love tomato leaf.
We have the Loewe tomato candle was really my introduction to the tomato leaf scent. But yeah, so that's the only fragrance I own.
I'm partial to the Malin and Goetz tomato candle, which I worked on.
I've been getting ads for that a lot.
We just came out with a refresher room spray.
Yes. Yes. Okay, that makes sense.
Did you work on the rum one?
It existed before I came to this company, but yes, it is ours.
I absolutely love that one.
It's a good one, right? It's in our bathroom at the office, which is great.
Yeah, I was buying it as my bathroom soap, and then I had to implement austerity, similar to Francis, because I spent too much money on other things. Well, Bibi, what are you wearing today?
I'm not allowed to wear anything.
Oh, that's right.
I have to put stuff on my skin to smell it, and I have to be able to smell what I'm working on, which is one of the sad parts of the job. But I do put something on every night when I leave. Like something new that's on the market so I can learn it.
Oh, that's nice. Well, okay. What about, going back to you saying you wanted to smell more, what was the original smell? What was your gateway fragrance?
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is crazy. My gateway fragrance was a gift from Santa and it was a Charlie Go Lightly body mist, which you don't even know what Charlie is, I'm sure. Charlie was a classic fragrance in the late 70s, early 80s that was meant for the working woman, made by Revlon. And there's lots of flankers off. There's like Charlie White, Charlie Black, Charlie Dada. No one really wears Charlie anymore. And this was an aerosol body mist. And I must have been 7 or 8. Whomever purchased that thought this smell was appropriate for a 7 or 8 year old. I don't know.
Well, Santa, what were you thinking?
Right. But Santa got it right. I could not get enough. I covered myself in it. And that really sort of started everything. Then I got my hands on a white linen Estee Lauder solid perfume compact. And I remember my parents took me to a party. It was the anniversary of the Brooklyn Bridge. So we went down to this guy's apartment so we could watch the fireworks. And I couldn't stop putting the solid perfume on to the point where he had to ask my parents to take me home because the apartment wasn't that big. And I was just filling it and filling it and filling it. And white linen is this like very aldehydic, huge floral fragrance. And we had to leave.
Oh my gosh.
I love the way you tell that story and like filling the room. So I was reading this. When I was like preparing for this last night, I was just looking up articles to read about fragrance culture, et cetera. And there's this one on Nylon. I'll just read an excerpt from it. So I realized perfume could tell a story, Omans says. It wasn't simply just something that smelled good. It was something that could evoke a memory or nostalgia or sense of place. The purpose of perfume became a lot more complex and more of an expression of art rather than something that's superficial and for fashion. Now he gets fragrance samples from Olfactory NYC and switches his perfumes every couple of months, using scent as a way to mark a time in his life. Revisiting them later would not be unlike reading a diary. So you telling that story just reminded me of that. And like, I don't know. I love what this guy is saying about like just always switching it. And then so, you walk past the person on the street and you get the whiff and then it's the Proustian moment, et cetera, right? Like, I don't know. That's what it's all about, right?
I really love that for vacations. If you are traveling and you bring a particular fragrance with you, then you have that, you smell it and it takes you right back to that place, which I love.
I'm sort of doing that right now. Yeah. I'm in the city for the next 2 weeks, but I'm usually up in Westchester where pet sitting, and I only brought in, one of my Etat Libre d'Orange samples because I bought the like 70 sample pack a couple years ago. And so I kind of do a similar thing. If I'm traveling, I just bring one of them.
Yeah.
So the one that I have with me is called La Fin du Monde. And the first two notes that are listed on Fragrantica are gunpowder and popcorn. It doesn't really smell like either of those things to me, but it's definitely a powdery scent.
Some of those fragrances are amazing. That brand is very cool.
But I probably will run out by the end of this like little 2 week visit. And so
perfect.
If I smell it again, all associated with.
Yep.
Just being in New York in October 2024.
Mm-hmm. So I do want to go back to the internet culture of fragrance now. And, you know, for me, like, what I just keep thinking of Jeremy Fragrance. I don't know if both of you are familiar with Jeremy Fragrance. He's yes. wild. I just get his reels on my Instagram so much. He's going through a very intense phase right now. He's not specifically necessarily who we have to talk about, but
is he still looking for a girlfriend, Francis?
That's the thing. There is a woman character now in his videos. Okay. And it's very odd. She's filming. And he's like just dousing her feet first. It's bizarre. But my point is that, like, internet culture and fragrance, it seems to be all about the freaks. Like, and it's people really, like, I was looking last night and like some of these people like have like fragrance freak as their name or something like that. Mm-hmm. But there's this culture of like, I don't know, just like very bold kind of brash expressiveness. And then, you know, you're talking about like, it's the leather gloves and like the getting the urine smell off. I don't know. It's like, to me, like this wave of fragrance culture seems very freaky. And then it like calls back to that, you know, hundreds of years ago. But I think too, it's like the other side of it. It's this very like class related thing, right? Like a mm-hmm. high class and like refined, and it's about subtlety and like the subtlety of scent. And which I guess those are two sides of the same coin too, right? Like Eyes Wide Shut style. I don't necessarily know where I'm going with this as a question, but I think is the culture of fragrance. Like, why do you think the internet embraces it in such this freaky way?
I don't know that it's that freaky. I think Jeremy's pretty freaky.
Well, not yeah. Yeah. Jeremy is pretty freaky.
Jeremy's pretty freaky. I mean, he came to a Fragrance Foundation Award and got up on the stage and did push-ups.
Of course he did.
Yes, he did. I mean, Jeremy loves Jeremy. I don't feel bad about saying that because he would say that.
That's his thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
When you think about, you know, like the fragrance world online, it's not my favorite one to go to because there are so many really smart and thoughtful, not only reviewers, but just people talking about fragrance. There's a woman named Professor Perfume who really sort of does her research and learns what she's saying. And then there are tons of people who are just giving their opinion.
Yeah.
And that's when it's kind of crazy. When someone who has a great personality gives their personal opinion and that triggers the sale of a fragrance, that's remarkable to me.
Yeah.
You know, like that's sort of like just the popular girl's wearing it. So now it sells.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very interesting. And that changes fragrance marketing completely.
Yes.
You know, an ad in a magazine can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
A billboard can't do that. And also, you know, having the celebrity fronting the brand is changing, like who your celebrity is. It's really interesting.
Well, so, I mean, like the internet has no smell, right? So I think that's what's interesting to me too about this like fragrance culture on the internet, where it's all just this storytelling and buying it like sight unseen, scent unsmelled. And it's, I don't know, but that's like fragrance is about story and about memory and about that like Proustian thing, like we're saying.
So the first time that ever really happened, I think, and I could be wrong, but it was Mary J. Blige, and she was selling her fragrance on HSN or QVC.
Yeah.
And she went on and told her personal life story. That is what she was inspired by to create this fragrance. And before she pretty much had finished talking, it had sold out.
Wow.
So Home Shopping Network is sort of the precursor to what TikTok is doing for perfume now.
Kind of, right?
Yeah.
I mean, people getting on there and just and telling their stories. And her story was so rich and so connecting with so many other people that, you know, bottle unsmelled, they purchased it. And it was a big deal when it happened. And then we saw an influx of brands trying, but it was sort of pre-TikTok, pre-reviewers sampling, you know, where we're going to send you three different samples based on a quiz online, wear them all, and then either you get a discount towards a full bottle of one of the things you liked, or, you know, one of those situations so you actually could sample it without having to go into a store.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of the precursor to just buying blindly.
Mm-hmm.
I was just gonna say, I retweeted this meme the other day, and it was, you know, somebody on Twitter saying, "Do you like my perfume?" And then it was just like a picture of their wrist, you know, just underscoring that there really is no way to share the way that you smell online.
But could you smell that picture?
I think I did like a self insert. Exactly. You know, I was like, oh, it smells like me. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, I think this. We were in a piece actually about skin scents, and there's this interesting thing that happens with the way that skin scents are marketed, because it's like, it's self-improvement, but it's not self-improvement. It's like, it smells like you, but better. And that was kind of the whole pitch of Glossier's first fragrance.
Whoever came up with that marketing is a genius.
Genius.
I mean, genius. Every single fragrance you put on, the last ingredient is you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Everything mm-hmm. smells different on every person's skin. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they just said it and sold it is like, I could bow down to them.
Yeah.
The smartest.
Yeah. Well, we actually had, well, Francis. Francis is a better researcher than me. He's more thorough. I could have just improvised.
Oh, no.
But you had written down, which I think is an amazing question, also coming off of our last episode, which was about magazines. Like, do you have any favorite pre-TikTok marketing campaigns for perfumes, like the billboard or the ad that just is stuck in your brain, where it's like people will be talking about this campaign forever?
It's Dior Sauvage Johnny Depp, isn't it?
I mean, that, in a bad way.
Back in the day, it's got to be Egoist. It was an Egoist ad with these windows being opened. Have you ever seen it?
No.
It's, and they're just going, Egoist, Egoist. It's so good. it's so French, and it's so good, and it will never leave me.
Mm. What does it? I mean, I don't know the scent. So describe, what does it bring to mind? What's like the story?
It's just sort of, I mean, Egoist is, it's a men's fragrance, mm-hmm. and it's Chanel, and it's super high quality, delicious, at this point, probably a little dated.
Yeah.
But when it came out, it was like everything fragrance was. It was, you know, French and fancy and fun, and it sort of nailed it all. Yeah. Trying to think of other.
Is it fragrance and Frenchness? Is like, so does that where, is that where the roots is? Or like, I feel like in my mind too, it's actually a little further east. Right?
So it's not where the roots are at all. Actually, it's where, I think it's where the roots of high fashion were. And for the people who could not afford the couture designs, they were placated with fragrance. Because
it's the roots of where fragrance marketing is.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like, you know, you couldn't buy a Dior dress, but you could buy a Dior fragrance, which is funny because you were saying something about how it was like the whole world of the elite. It's actually not the elite. It's like the step down.
It's the lesser. Buying the socks.
Yeah. Right.
Bourgeois.
Yeah. It's the belt.
Yeah.
Hermes belt.
But I mean, they always talk about the spice trail going through what is then called the Middle East. And all these ingredients come from those locations. So there is, you know, Asia is a huge location for the birthplace of fragrance and ingredients. I'm not steeped with like the first origin, but I mean, you had it, what do they say? Like Cleopatra had these fragrances buried with her, and she would douse herself with jasmine oil every single day. And I mean, in Morocco, it's filled with roses, and some of the best oils come from there. So the ingredients come from everywhere. The people putting them together into little formulas, you think primarily in France. But I also could be wrong.
No, I think that's my perception as well. Like the fundamentals were assembled through trade, and sometimes through like the violence of trade.
Yes.
But I associate the current market with Europe, although the buyers are not necessarily European. Like if you're talking about the bigger houses like LVMH, and how well LVMH has done. LVMH has done so well because they started to adjust for the Chinese consumer and the Japanese consumer and what they're interested in.
And I forget, yeah. We often forget about duty free, which is massive.
That's to me, the idea of spending hundreds of dollars in an airport is wild. But like you see people walking around with the bags of stuff. I don't know if either of you ever.
I think I've bought like a gift.
Yeah.
Because I messed up and I didn't
get something while
I was there. Right. But there are specific fragrances that are designed specifically for the duty-free shops for people traveling.
What is that? What are the traits?
I mean, depends on what airport you're going to be in, you know?
Yeah.
So
Charles de Gaulle is a little different than Heathrow.
Probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And certain collections are only sold there.
Really? Wow.
Yep.
I never thought about that. I've never stopped to like linger in a duty free shop of any, whether, you know, the perfume or liquor or the sunglasses. It's never occurred to me.
Maybe next time.
Maybe.
I never stop either. Cause I never have extra time.
I was just traveling this weekend and I was at a wedding where, the dinner after the wedding, I really liked this. The table settings, with some flowers, but there's also a lot of brassica, some cabbage, various cabbages. And walking into the room, I grew up on a farm, so I know that smell very well, the smell of warm brassica. And walking in, I'm like, at first I'm like, this is so odd. Like, where is this coming from? And then, you know, you sit down and there's a wedge salad, great wedge salad on the plate. And then you start eating that. And then the smell of the brassica was kind of subsumed into the room. I don't know, just kind of my latest scent anecdote, but I do like when I was prepping for this too, I was just thinking about all the scents like from growing up on a farm and like the scent of like rotting sunflower leaves on the floor when we were, you know, stripping the sunflowers and the scent of hay in my neighbor's barn and stuff. And I was waxing poetic to myself last night as preparing. I did want to ask about like, I don't know. I asked you about your like early childhood perfume memories, but I'm more curious too about those more like solitary scents in the world that like are core to your memory and understanding of smell.
For me, when you put onions in a pan with butter, it's the most comforting smell ever. Yeah. So when I started to be left alone at home when I was a kid, I would do that if I got nervous and it would fix everything.
That's
and just
so
calm,
sweet.
Calm me down. So that was one of the smell, like that was a smell of comfort for me. Mm. A lot of smells take me back to summer camp, just because I have a lot of memories of there and certain locations of like sitting on pine needles. You know, waiting to play volleyball and those sorts of things. And so it'll trigger a lot of camp memories.
Dry summer grass.
Exactly. And then even like the bathroom with 1,000 girls getting ready with a lot of spray deodorant. Like that's a very specific smell.
Same thing for me. I have this really strong scent memory of sitting outside the shower building and like shaving my legs with the gardening hose. Because they were like, if you're just shaving, don't take the shower because everyone's waiting. So you have to do it outside with the hose. Yep.
We did it with a bucket.
Yeah, in the bucket. Yeah, exactly. And but the smell of everyone's shampoo is mixing together and wafting out of the building. Mm. And I remember like Garnier Fructis. And then there was that children's shampoo where the bottle looked like a fish.
It's a L'Oreal.
L'Oreal. That one takes me way back. And there's even... And the other ones that I think I remember from childhood are there was this gummy bear perfume and also the Victoria's Secret body sprays when those caught on with high school girls.
Mm-hmm.
There's a purple one. What was it called? There's a purple one and there was a brown one that was like an amber one. And I thought everyone was either like an amber girl or like the purple one girl, but I can still smell it so strongly.
Which one were you?
Purple. Yeah, let me look it up, actually. It's called like Secret Delight or something. You know, they're all like that.
So I am way, way, way older than you. Our shampoos were Finesse, Silkians, and Prel coming out of the shower house.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I don't think we used any of those.
Yep.
Love Spell. It was called Love Spell.
Love Spell. That is a classic.
Are there, the one other smell I was thinking about too in my little scent memory last night was just sea air. Like I grew up on the coast and sea air and seaweed. And I think like maybe the strongest expression of that I've ever smelled is I bought recently, this was like a year ago in Brooklyn, this seaweed kimchi. And it like farmed in Maine, made in Maine. And I would open the jar and like maybe take a bite, maybe just smell it and like put it away because it was so intense. But I don't know. Are there any like sea air scents like that? I might want to get one. Yeah, yeah. Okay, give me some of the good ones.
We have an ingredient. We have a red seaweed that we use for all sort of marine-y, aquatic, briny things. Mm-hmm. The list of marine things are very long. I know that TS and Durga just came out with one that's in collaboration with like a whale rescue that I think was quite aquatic in that way.
You know, I love TS and Durga.
And there's, I think it's called, my French is terrible, but Un Air de Bretagne.
After so many years in fragrance, I would think your French would be better.
You would think, but after taking French 1 like 3 times and failing out, I can set a table. Table settings and fruits and vegetables, and that's about as far as I can get. I know you would think I would pick up on it, but I just can't.
Well, mine's even worse, so.
And that's like really like low tide, shipyard, like everything.
The DS and Durga one?
Well, the Britannia one, because I think, I don't know if this is what you're asking, Francis, but I've also thought about this too, where I'm like, oh, you know, I probably wouldn't wear it, but it would be nice to have like a really freaky one that smells like actually like low tide.
Yeah, like low tide, like spray on the rocks, like you know, salt.
I think you'd have to look real niche because no one's gonna want to make one that people are right.
Yeah,
maybe a candle.
Yeah, a candle.
I bet if you look on Etsy, there's a low tide candle.
So I do want to hear more though, actually, about like what you do in your job now. Like we were talking a little bit about like more earlier when you were first getting started. I would love to hear kind of like what your day to day is like in your current role.
So I'm still evaluating. Like I still have a bunch of accounts. Now I just have a few evaluators under me. Mm-hmm. And so what is my day like? Depends on how many projects I have going. It can be from like 6 to 20.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot. So we're a smaller house. So each evaluator has to have a lot of different clients rather than focus on one.
Mm-hmm. How you say smaller, how big?
We're the fifth largest.
Okay. Okay. But it's but there not, are, there's no, yeah.
They're not houses. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it sort of like takes up, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, drop.
Yeah. Yeah.
5. Mm-hmm. With the biggest of the smallest.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice place to be.
Yeah. It's good.
Sorry. Keep interrupting you.
But we have to like wear a lot of different hats and you have to switch from brand to brand to brand, which is, it's hard rather than like, say I work on Estee Lauder all day or I work on Bath and Body Works all day.
One
and then you're sort of like in that zone and we are all flipping daily. So we actually sit in an area with the perfumers for now, which is nice because you can get to them very easily. And, you know, they're formulating on their computer. And we have a lab upstairs and I wait for the formulas to be done. And then they put the fragrance in this little bin that says my name on it. I go and I pull it out. And if the perfumer's here, I'll smell with that person or I'll smell on my own and give comments and we will adjust to get it to where we think it'll be perfect, or how the client would like it.
Is the perfumer evaluator relationship like perfumer writer, evaluator, editor?
It's more like evaluator director. I would say, because we can give suggestions of starting points. We'll say, you know, start with that citrus floral that you made for so-and-so, but add a saffron note on top. And could you make it $4 less? And can I have it in 2 days? Yeah. You know, so we sort of have to keep everything moving. Mm-hmm. And then we get it back and then we say, oh, the saffron's great, but it's like, that's a lot of saffron. Can you dial it back? You know, so it's sort of a direction editing. Yes.
Yeah.
But together we sort of make the final decisions.
Mm-hmm. When you said Bath and Body Works, I have so many scent memories from Bath and Body Works and of my mom rotating her scents seasonally. Mm-hmm. You know, summer meant that she would have a little spray bottle of cucumber melon in the fridge and have like a cold spritz, which was awesome. And then sweet pea was like a spring one. And then, you know, whatever the like the cinnamon apple and pumpkin ones would just come out in the fall. So I love that so much. And I was going to ask you though, when you smell something at work, what are you technically smelling it on? Are you smelling it on paper? Are you smelling it on your skin? Smell on the bottle? Do you have to smell all those places?
So this, we smell it on the blotters.
Okay.
It's a blotter.
Yeah.
And it's just a piece of like slightly thicker cardboard. Mm-hmm. We'll start there. And then, but then once you narrow down, you have to take things to skin because they react so differently on paper versus on human. Mm-hmm. Things that you don't smell at all can come up on skin and you have to be aware of that. Mm-hmm. And certain, it's hard because certain people's skin push certain notes. Like I push green notes, which is not so helpful some of the time. Mm-hmm. So often if you're working on a project, you want to be smelling on the same person repeatedly. So we ask everyone to come in with clean skin and we're often saying, does anyone have skin? Which is a very funny request, especially when you first, like the interns were like, have you got skin? They're like, yeah.
It's all over.
All over, head to toe, but they learn.
How do you figure out what your skin pushes?
You can smell it. Like I can smell.
You have to compare it to somebody else, right?
Well, if I'm smelling a fragrance on the blotter,
okay, mm-hmm.
and it's got, you know, citrus notes on top, florals in the middle, and easy woods in the back, mm-hmm. and in the floral sea, there's, you know, some white florals and some green florals, and then I put it on, and suddenly these green notes are popping out. These green mm-hmm. florals are like, phew! You could deduce that I push green.
The place I went to in Berlin, so I just looked it up too. It's called Breathe. If any listeners are in Berlin, go to Breathe.
I'm gonna write that down.
Yeah, it's a great store. So what they had is beneath all the bottles on the shelves, they had like a glass rod that was like sit in a holder, and he would just like pull. He didn't like have to spray it on the rod. He would pull out the glass rod, and you'd get a whiff of it. I'd never seen that before, and to me, it was like the it stays on the glass, or like how often do they have to refresh that? What is the system?
I've seen it with ceramics. I've never seen it with glass.
It was glass. Yeah. It made no sense to me. I didn't understand how it would like hold.
I know that you can create ceramics that are scented.
Okay.
For events, it's not cheap, but you can, you can definitely do it.
Like you put it in the clay?
You put it in the mixture. Mm-hmm. Glass, I don't know. Maybe if you soak it long enough, it just like is porous enough to suck it in.
My guess was that like every day they just like spray one in the morning into like the holder.
That could work. Mm-hmm.
I did, speaking of scents and clay, scents and dirt. So you live in New York. Did you happen to go to the Dia Chelsea space anytime in the past year or so?
Oh, the Earth Room.
Not the Earth Room.
Not the Earth Room.
Well, we might have talked about this. The big Earth.
We're really obsessed with the Earth Room on this podcast.
Well, you know, she does have a newsletter called Dirt, so we do talk about dirt a lot. Okay, give me 1 second. I have to get the name of this artist, Delcy Morelos. And so what it was, it's this, you know, a big Chelsea gallery space with mm-hmm. like the high rafters, etc. And I don't know, probably like 100 by 100 feet, probably more than that. And basically it was this like ziggurat of earth with like little bits of like dried grass sticking out and stuff. But they used scents within the dirt, and it's the dirt is like subsuming the rafters even. It's just, it's amazing. You walk around the space, but they like scented it too with cinnamon, with aromatic spices, including cinnamon and clove, and its soil and clay, conceived as a shrine to peat. The work uses, anyways,
I wish it was still
P-E-A-T, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was the most amazing thing. And like, it was like, I've never felt like so comfortable in a gallery space. It was like, I don't know. It went down
that's,
in July.
That's because you come from the dirt.
Exactly. Yeah, that was your onions and
you
butter.
You got me pegged.
Right? I mean, that's your comfort zone. Could you smell the cinnamon and clove as you walked in?
Well, I did, but I didn't understand that's what that was until we asked the gallery attendant. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, like, how did they make this, et cetera? Because I thought that was, I was like, oh, this is just some exquisite dirt, you know, like,
right.
Like I like, I, you know, I, the smell of like manure and dirt is like nostalgic to me too. It doesn't have to be cinnamon and clove. It's just, mm-hmm. it's just the dirt. But it was such an amazing, if I wish it was still up, yeah. But now it's just my memory.
Oh, just a set memory. It's interesting because mm-hmm. cinnamon and clove is not what I would normally associate with dirt. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are those classic holiday notes,
yeah.
You know, that take you to Bath and Body Works, take you to a pumpkin, take you to a,
it wasn't,
you
know, so sharp though.
Chai or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's it. Like I would have thought more hay or tobacco or something like mm-hmm. that.
The hay was in there, I think, naturally, because the
real
the,
hay.
Yeah, the real right. hay, which I love the smell of hay.
I love the smell of hay too. Mm-hmm. It's really, it's got so much happening in it. It's mm-hmm. like cozy and fresh.
What are your top three ingredient, top three underrated ingredients?
Notes or ingredients?
Notes.
Notes? I don't
know.
Oh, ingredients.
Well, I don't know the difference. I'm a rube.
Oh.
Okay, so let's say ingredients.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But mine are not underrated.
Okay. Well, that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So orris is mm-hmm. one of my favorites. Which is, to me, it always is the smell of a rich lady's purse.
Mm. Oh, perfect.
I like the inside. It's slightly cosmetic. It's mm. slightly leathery. It's what I like to use when anyone's like, could you elevate this fragrance? If you put more orris in it, it just makes it fancier. Mm. And it's white. It's pretty great. So we have this curry note that I have spent my whole career here trying to incorporate into fragrance. So far I've got one on the market within it, but it is
sort of
the
like
hardest.
A curry leaf.
Yeah. Smells like curry. Smells like yeah. curry powder. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us which perfume is on the market that has it in it? Or is it not?
Oh yeah. It's God, I can't. The brand is Lauban.
Okay.
And I think it's in Hinterland. Hmm. I'm not 100% sure that that's the one that has the curry, but it's definitely that brand. And one of them has the curry. So I'm always trying to make this work. I just tried to do a curry chocolate. So that's one of my favorites. It's mm-hmm. just because it's so unique, and we're always looking for like that something different, you know. So the curry is my friend. There's a note called Divana that mm-hmm. we use. It's a sort of a dried fruit. Pruny, raisiny, kind of smells a little bit like the middle of a Fig Newton. That I really enjoy. When I just started, I was like, hey, if I have a kid, I'm going to name my kid Divana. I didn't. Yeah. But I was like, that's a great
that's free cool. idea.
Right?
Any listeners who are pregnant right now, maybe
feel free,
think about
it. Divana. And then I would make up. So my thing is making up ridiculous fragrance names for the submissions.
Oh, do you get to help name these fragrances sometimes?
I do them all. Like
you
for me,
all?
Okay. I do all mine.
Okay.
And I live for a pun. So it's the things that I've come up with are absurd. Divana dance with somebody. Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah.
Wait. Yeah. So, okay. So this is actually the reason I asked that question is I'm not fully clear on like you guys are making them for other houses, like, or I mean for clients.
And, yes.
And you're, yeah. So, but you help name the final thing. Like it's kind
no,
of like, okay.
Not the final
thing. It's the internal.
The internal one.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, but yeah. I will say, some brands have taken my names and launched those.
Oh.
Okay. No one said anything.
And you're like, wow, that was supposed to be a bad pun, but somebody must have liked it.
It wasn't the really punny ones.
Okay.
Last time we talked, we were talking about developing sense with celebrities. Some celebrities are super involved and some aren't. But going back to the Mary J. Blige example and the sort of like parasociality with like traditional celebrities, but like also new celebrities, which are like influencers. I think I get the sense that the person who's buying it really wants to believe that that celebrity was involved, but maybe ultimately it doesn't matter because it's either a good scent or not a good scent. Like Ariana Grande, she has a reputation of having some of the best celebrity perfume products, but whether that means she was the most involved at this point or involved at all, I feel like people don't necessarily care once it acquires the reputation of being good. But in the beginning, that storytelling or the parasociality is much more important.
Having a great creative director.
Right. And I mean, the popularity of the celebrity in itself is your sort of launch pad. Mm-hmm. You know, every super fan is going to buy one.
Mm-hmm. But if it's bad, will they buy it again? Or would they buy a second?
I don't think they will.
Yeah.
I don't think they will. But it doesn't matter because they'll come out with another one.
Yeah.
Shortly after. So they don't have to.
Yeah.
They can buy the next one.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the thing with so many, like I'm thinking of like celebrity boozes too, of which there are now so many. It's like, you know, probably they're not going to buy Ariana Grande's canned Moscow Mule. I'm not, she wouldn't have a canned Moscow Mule. Anyways, they're not going to buy. They'll buy that once, but then they're probably going to buy just a bottle of Stoli vodka. I don't know.
Right. But I mean, Ariana Grande just came out with three more, so you're good to go. If you like Ariana Grande, you are going to be fulfilled in your fragrance collection with plenty.
Yeah, you will have five vanilla perfumes.
Right.
Sorry.
I've liked the ones of hers that I've smelled.
And some of them are great. Some of them are really good.
But they're definitely...
they cater to a certain client.
Yeah, they're just like, they're inoffensive. And sometimes I want to be a little offended.
Right. I mean, they're sweet and yummy and easy. Mm-hmm. And some have woods and they're well-rounded. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. This is not going to be your, you know, low tide. Now you're not going to have Ariana Grande brings you low tide.
As we were talking, I remembered another perfume that sort of falls in this category by Hilde Soliani. I'm pronouncing her name okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She makes all those gourmand ones. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a big profile of her in, I think, New York Times
in the
magazine.
Times. Yeah.
Yeah. Which like three different people sent to me.
I love when that happens. My dad sends it. My cousin sends it. Three friends send it. Any fragrance article, I like it.
Yeah. My agent was like, have you seen this? But it's called Miss Tranchant. It was made as a tribute to a seafood chef. And the scent notes are butter, lobster, oyster, saffron, and salt.
That sounds so good.
That's your fragrance. That's what you're looking for.
I might order a sample.
Listener, think about that. The butter, the fragrance, the salt. Think about low tide. And we'll see you next week because this has been Tasteland.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us, BB.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much.